JBS presents the Hampton Synagogue's Author Discussion Series with Rabbi Avraham Bronstein.
My name is Glenn Dorskin. Welcome to the Hampton Synagogue. The Hampton Synagogue Author Discussion Series, now in its 27th year, is a cultural highlight of our summer season, both for members of our congregation and our many visitors from across the Hamptons. I am proud to serve as series chair, and it is my great pleasure to share our past season with you, our global congregation, in celebration of Jewish Book Month.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Bronstein. It's just a delight to be here again. You know, when you interviewed me in August 2020, it was the height of COVID. I believe it was the first event here. It was my first and actually I only did two live events. The rest I did were all virtual. But I have to say I was very nervous, and you asked the best questions and you made me feel very comfortable, and I'm thrilled to be back here again.
No pressure. Exactly. So you had said that we're going to begin tonight without even a question, but you're going to start with a reading from the book.
Oh, okay.
So why don't you set that up and tell us what you'll be reading.
Okay, so I guess the theme of the book, one of the themes of the book is the question of genealogy and inherited bloodlines, and are we responsible for the behavior of our parents? So we have, and we'll probably talk more about this later, we have the twin sisters whose parents went through the Holocaust, and we have a Catholic priest who finds out that he was actually born to Jewish parents during the Holocaust. And then we have Brian, who is in his 20s, and he was raised by loving parents, and he thought his father was just wonderful. And he is a photographer for a Jewish newspaper. He's not Jewish. And he goes with our character, Branka, to cover a name-changing event at a German community. It's the last street name named after a Nazi. And there is a small group of neo-Nazis protesting, and he recognizes his own father there. So he comes home in a total panic, and he decides that he's going to look for evidence. You know, maybe my father is a, you know, FBI infiltrator. Maybe he wasn't really a Nazi. So he goes down to the basement and tries to find some evidence. He went back downstairs and turned on all the room air conditioners on the first floor, and then headed for the finished basement, the coolest spot in the house. He would start his hunt there. Its walls were knotty pine, and there was a pool table that took over much of the space, save for an old sofa and some chairs and a stereo. The other half of the basement was unfinished, only a furnace, a washer and dryer, and a second refrigerator. A long walk-in closet that housed the family set of blue Samsonite suitcases and his late grandmother's cedar chest ran along the length of the wall. He walked into the closet and scouted it out. Behind the neatly arranged family luggage, the cedar chest, an ironing board, and several cardboard boxes, he spotted an old, beaten-up-looking valise. It was light brown, with darker brown straps on each side. Brian began to shake. Might the suitcase hold the answers he was looking for? Dare he open it? And he did open it. The top layer within the suitcase was filled with pages and pages of documents in German. Some had swastikas on them. Brian began to sweat and felt his heart palpitating. He believed he was too young to have a heart attack, but his hands were shaking and he was short of breath. Swastikas? Why would he have hidden them away? His father had a stash of documents with the heinous, odious Nazi symbol. He thought that if a creature from another planet suddenly appeared and asked him to describe its meaning, he would have difficulty putting it into words. It was the sum of everything evil and wrong in human nature, the symbol of mass murder, cruelty, torture, depravity, intolerance, prejudice, hate, mindless obedience. There were not enough words in any language to fully express the meaning of the swastika. Brian also recognized several copies of a newspaper named Der Stürmer that depicted Jews as horrific characters with grotesque facial features, huge noses, and distorted bodies. As he dug beneath the papers, he felt more cloth, which he took out. Unfolding the gray-green material, he saw it was a uniform with SS shoulderboard and insignia, as well as a number of Nazi medals.
Scary. So the book is really about the two girls that we met in the original book,
right.
Jojo and Branka. Could you just remind us who they are, what their dynamic is, and just tell us a little bit about their characters as we re-meet them in this book?
Okay. Well, they are fraternal twins, and they are born in a DP camp. Their father is a Holocaust survivor who lost his first wife and unborn child in the Kelse pogrom, which took place a year after the war was over. He is saved by a righteous Gentile. And after his wife and unborn child are murdered, she takes care of him and she stays with him. And they go to a displaced persons camp together, and everyone just assumes she's Jewish, and he passes her off as Jewish and continues to pass her off as Jewish. And you know, the question, why didn't he have her converted? We can discuss that later. But anyway, the girls come to the United States when they're 3.5 years old. Branka is very intense and anxious and full of fear. Jojo appears to be much more lighthearted, certainly at that time. Jojo wants to be an actress in the Shadows We Carry, and Branka wants to be a journalist, and they both experience what it was like coming of age in the late 60s and early 70s, just really at the beginning of the women's movement, where there really weren't the kind of legal protections for women that there later were.
For me, it was so much fun kind of jumping back into the story, because the story really is very character-driven, more than plot-driven. Maybe we'll get to that a little bit later in the conversation. So it was really fun to jump back in and see these girls kind of grown up and starting their lives as young adults, which takes me to a question, which is, did you have parts of this book in mind as you were writing the original? When did you think about writing a sequel to that book?
Well, that's an interesting question. I did not intend to end The Takeaway Men when I did. I always wanted to take it into the late 60s and 70s, because that's just such an interesting time. But my husband over here, Stuart, who is a journalist and my muse, I showed him every chapter after I was finished with it, and he weighed in on it and he made suggestions. And when I showed him what became the last chapter, but I didn't feel it was the end of the story, he said, "That's the end of the book. You're finished." And I said, "No, it's not the end of the book. I have more to say." And he said, "Trust me, that's the end of the book." And the truth is, I was more than happy to be finished with the book, but I always knew I had more to say. And then what happened, you know, I thankfully got a lot of positive feedback, but one of the, I don't know if I want to say criticisms, but people were said, you know, you left us hanging. What happened to the girls? You've got to write a sequel. But I knew, I kind of knew where it was going to go.
So when did you actually start to sit down to write the sequel? Or did you have notes from the original writing that you kind of continued with? Or did you sit down and start from scratch?
I did have some notes because I did expect it to take the Takeaway Men further than I did. It was, you know, the Takeaway Men came out in August 2020. And I would say I did a lot of virtual programs, and I would say that in 2021 at some point I mean we couldn't go anyplace, and I decided that would be a good project to write the sequel. So I actually, because I really didn't have any place to go, and I didn't really have much else to do, I wrote it in 9 months, which was much faster than I had written the first book. But that's because, like I said, I was very concentrated, and I had just a feel for where I wanted the story to go.
So as you were writing both of these books, I'm just asking you to compare the experience. Did you find it easier to put yourself into the perspective of Jojo and Branka when they were very little? Or was it easier for you to write them as characters when they were in their 20s and 30s?
I don't think there was much difference. I don't think that I can really say there was a quantitative difference.
Okay. Was there anything in their experience in this book, you know, when they're in their 20s and 30s, they're young adults, they're starting their careers, they're starting their families, that really spoke to you in a particular way, or that really resonated with any of your experiences where you felt like, you know, you were kind of writing something which was very close to home?
Yes. Of course. Okay. And people say, is it autobiographical? No, it's not autobiographical. For one thing, I am not the child of Holocaust survivors. Both of my parents were born here and served in the U.S. Army in World War II. So I did set the story in the community in which I grew up. I would say that one of the things that I did experience was when I was in college and I toyed with the idea of becoming a lawyer and going to law school. And I was basically talked out of it by my advisor and said it would be better for me to become a teacher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was just kind of what the times were like then. I mean, of course, there were people who really had the courage to follow their dreams. I guess I wasn't one of them. So that definitely resonated. And the whole, you know, that whole terrible period, well, the Kennedy assassination and the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and the election, the campaign of 1968 and the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, you know, those were all things that I remembered. But I also do meticulous research. You know, I'm a former high school history teacher, mm-hmm. and I love the research. I think I love it almost as much as the writing. So I research a tremendous amount.
You know, so just on that, what was the like factoid or the bit of information that you learned researching this book that made it into the book that maybe you didn't know before or that really resonated?
Well, A couple of things. First of all, the whole notion of this German or Nazi community on Long Island.
That's real?
It's real. It's real. It's in Yampang. It's called German Gardens. I called it Fatherland Gardens. It wasn't until 2017 where New York State said you can no longer require German lineage to live there.
You know, my kid goes to camp at Yampang.
No, they don't.
At Brookhaven Camp.
Oh.
which used to have a relationship with the Hampton Synagogue, actually. There was a bus that left from our parking lot that went to Brookhaven Camp in Yampang.
Well, I don't, look, we, it's not,
not
all
Camp Sinkfree,
of...
no.
and interestingly, prior to World War II, there was a Nazi youth camp on the grounds there. And the purpose of the camp was to indoctrinate American youngsters into Nazi values. But that, of course, was shut down when the U.S. entered World War II. So that was definitely that one was a big surprise.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to ask a question based on something I mentioned before, which is that reading the book, you get the sense that there isn't one particular plot or story that's carrying through. What you're getting is a series of episodes about these characters over the course of their lives. It's almost like watching like a TV series. What I was really thinking about actually when I was reading it, by the way, was Sidney Taylor's series, The All of a Kind Family, which maybe people here have read. Right, that was definitely the feeling that I had reading this book, because it was the same thing. There was no real story, nothing happens to them. It's a family that's living their lives, and from book to book and from chapter to chapter, they're doing different things, and you get to kind of peek in and you get to watch them. I'm just wondering, you know, what you think about that, and I'm wondering what books and what materials influenced you as you tried like putting the book together.
Yeah, I don't know if I totally agree with that.
Okay.
I think that I had certain themes that I wanted to carry through in each of the books. So, and there were questions that I wanted to raise for the reader. So, you know, that was one of the questions was, you know, nature versus nurture. Are we our genes, or are we our own people? Are we responsible for what our parents did? I wanted to also raise the question of, you know, prejudice and you know how we treat those who are others. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think a lot happened. So you're saying you don't...
There's not like one story, or there's not like one problem that they have to solve.
Oh, no.
Like,
no, there were many.
And they're not all related to each other. And a lot of the chapters are about side stories that really have nothing to do with the main plot. But there's like something which happened that day, or there was an episode in somebody's life. And it doesn't really tie in necessarily to like the larger theme, but it's like a cute vignette that sheds light on their life at the time or the times.
Okay.
I liked it. It was
good. Okay.
It was very comfortable, because it almost felt like watching a TV show where you watch episode to episode and things are kind of happening, but in like a more slow kind of way. It wasn't like watching a movie where there's like one narrative arc that takes you from the beginning to end, and then it resolves itself by the end.
It's interesting, because I just never had thought about it, but yeah, okay.
Okay, great. So you answered my next question, which was, what do you think the major themes of the book are? It was interesting that, like, I think every single character in the book, at least any of the interesting characters, they have a backstory they didn't really know about at the beginning of the book.
And it had to do with their family genealogy.
Genealogy, yeah. Mostly it had to do with World War II. And I'm wondering if you have the sense, or you're trying to maybe say something about that particular historical time after World War II, things were very jumbled and nobody really knew where they were from or, you know, what their family backgrounds had been. Do you think that's still true? You know, do we all still have shadows that we carry, or were you speaking more about one particular time when everything was so confused and trying to reorient itself?
That's an interesting question. Well, I think everything was very confused then,
for sure.
But I do think that we all carry our shadows today. I think mm-hmm. everybody has things, you know, in their family background, and that, you know, that was just a big question that I wanted to raise. Who are we? So, you know, was the Catholic priest Jewish, or was he Catholic, or you know, could he be both, for right. instance? And was the fact that Brian's father, a former Nazi, or a current Nazi, a neo-Nazi, right. actually, you know, is he responsible for that? And I think, you know, the larger issue is very current today in terms of the whole issue of DNA. You know, people are very interested in having their DNA tested. But, I mean, what does that really tell us about ourselves when we find out who our ancestors are? Is that really important? I don't know the answer. I just wanted to raise a lot of questions. I don't know any of the answers to these questions.
And it makes these characters really very interesting, because they're all going through the book not really knowing exactly where the other shoe is going to drop, but they all have the sense that there's lots of other shoes that are dropping all around them.
Right.
For sure. Do you think there's anything in Jojo and Branka's experiences, the things that they went through in the book, that are particularly, you know, resonant or meaningful today to us in 2023? Or do you think they're interesting more as just shedding light on a very interesting time in history?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I think, you know, women have struggled and fought for equal rights, and we're still not 100% there. You know, we've gotten there, but not completely. So I think that's true. I think things are, you know, certainly much better for women when they were. But I think, you know, my original desire was to tell the stories of these Holocaust families and their children. And, you know, I'm not the child of Holocaust survivors, but I have many friends who are, and I learned a tremendous amount from them. And I wanted to tell their story, because I do think that cloud of the Holocaust, and they will be the first ones to tell you, continues to hover over the second generation and the third generation as well. So, it was important to me to get their story right. And that's why, you know, I had several of them read both books. And it's the reason why I made Fraternal Twins, because I wanted to show the whole range of the experience of children of Holocaust survivors. So, you know, they all were impacted in some way, but in very different ways. So you had these twins who were, born of the same parents and had the same environment. They reacted, but they reacted differently.
Why do you think, I guess it's a theoretical question, because you don't actually address it in the book, but it's so tantalizing. Why do you think that Jojo and Branka's father never converts them or never even tells them that they're not Jewish? He just kind of waits for them maybe to find out, or maybe they don't find out, but he kind of leaves it as an unresolved issue, which weighs on him over the course of his entire life.
I don't really know, but I can hazard a guess. I think that Aaron was a person who made his own rules. and he just didn't want to deal with it. I think he might have had an opportunity to have his wife converted at one point, you know, but then once he got to the displaced persons camp and she was accepted as Jewish, I just think he couldn't find the loophole or the courage, because everybody just assumed she was Jewish and she was a good Jew. I mean, she did
it well.
She did it very well. It grated on Branka. It bothered her tremendously, but it didn't bother her sister at all. So I just think it was probably, I'm just guessing, anybody else can guess as well. I think he was embarrassed.
I think that's what I think also by the end of the book. Okay. I think that he could have asked his wife to convert at the DP camp. And then once he didn't, and they came to the States, so he was already in shul, and he was already accepted as somebody who was observant.
Right.
And it would have caused waves, and the last thing he wanted to do would be to start waves and start people, and begin to have people casting aspersions and asking questions and digging into his past, so he didn't.
Yeah.
And then after that happened, there was just never a good time to bring it up, because...
Exactly.
Right, when do you tell your girls that, halachically speaking...
Right.
You know, they're not Jewish according to the standards of the rabbi who I trust.
And he cared about that.
Right.
So he was, I think human beings are very complicated.
Although he got great satisfaction out of the fact that his daughters were both accepted as Jewish with nobody asking
and
any questions.
And the Jewish grandchildren.
Half
of them.
They were accepted as Jewish grandchildren.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because that whole issue became such a large rabbinic issue in the 1960s and 70s after World War II, and it was so fascinating to see how it kind of wasn't a major issue for so many of the characters in the book. It was just something that happened. It's interesting. So, last question for me is this the end of the saga, or is this going to be a trilogy?
Right now, I have no plans for a trilogy. I'll see. Right now, I don't have any plans. People have asked me for a third book. I don't see it in the immediate future. I have another idea for a novel, which I'm researching, and I would, like to write first. If I ever do get to a third book, I don't know.
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.